So today's topic and subject is on welcome. Now, what comes to your mind when we talk about welcome? I'll give you a hint. When Dashrat, Tuesday is the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, and Dashrat was received, or rather, Dashrat received Vishwamitra, and when Vishwamitra came, then he welcomed him. Okay, so we're going to be talking about that specific situation and what Vishwamitra did in that welcome. Is that another clue? Okay, so one idea that comes to mind is when there's the idea of welcoming someone, then naturally there's the idea of presenting whatever facility and comfort to the guest. Yes? Right, when in the Vedic scriptures it describes that even if an enemy comes to your house, then you meant to welcome them, not consider them an enemy. Yes. And if you disobey that, you get welcomed to a special hellish planet.
It represents some characteristic of hospitality and respect and compassion.
Right. Naturally, it represents a character of hospitality, proper, respectful behavior, proper Vaishnava character. Good? Anything else? Right? The guest is to be honored as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Atiti, the Supreme Lord has appeared in the form of the guest. And Prabhupada made the point that the guest is very important, that one can even stop the arati and receive the guest. Good.
And quoted the verse that Krishna said, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee.
Right, and one who claims my devotee of my devotee is my devotee. Very good. So this is about welcome. And it's interesting that when we discuss, or when we immediately bring the point about welcome, just like if you're going to go to someone's house, they're going to welcome you, right? Now in normal English, what are they going to say? How is it? So they're going to say, how is it? It is okay, it is fit. And they'll say, how are you? How's your health? Etc. They're going to welcome you, and generally when they welcome you, they will ask you, how are you? Okay. Now when a saintly person comes, and when you receive a saintly person, it's the other way around. Just like when you receive a saintly person by how are you? You will say, welcome, let's say, Guru Maharaj, or welcome Maharaj. And would you say, how are you? You may say, okay Maharaj, how are you, how's your health? Right. But that may be, but what do you think is going to turn, or what's going to change? Or will anything change? Yes. Generally, when you go to someone's house, they'll welcome you, all right? And we said you are representing God, therefore you'll be the focus of attention. But when you receive a saintly person, then very often the saintly person changes the focus. And now, who becomes the focus? Believe it or not, you. And the saintly person will, you generally may ask the person, how are you? And he'll ask, you know, I'm fine, and how are you? And when the saintly person comes, he will not generally ask, how are you? But there is a specific question that a saintly person will always ask. And this question was asked to Dashrath Maharaj, King Dashrath, when Vishwamitra came to his house. And who knows that question? How is your spiritual life? Close? He asked him, how is your preparation going for death? That's how he asked about it. If death is going well, then you're okay. He did not ask, how's your parents, how's your family, how's your children, are they growing up, are they cute, how's this, how's that, how's your kingdom? No. He asked him, how is your preparation for death going? So it's an interesting subject about welcoming a saintly person. And it's important, next time you should try it, when you visit someone and they say, how is it? And you should say, oh, fine, but and how is your preparation for death going? Sometimes you really shock them. What's that? But that is actually the proper inquiry that a saintly person will ask. Okay, that's how he would expect a proper welcome. So today's topic will be around that, and what I'd like to do is read a purport, a very beautiful purport in the second canto. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada very beautifully presents this subject about preparation for death, and in a very concise, very beautiful way he presents the points. You will not find, I'm still waiting to find a person, personality whose ability to present spiritual life, present such important aspects of spiritual life in English in his purport in such an amazing way. Prabhupada has such a wonderful way to present the most difficult understanding subject in a wonderful, easy way for us to digest. And we're also going to be talking, from welcome, we go to death. It's quite a contradiction. But in spiritual life, it's interesting. When you talk about welcome, generally you welcome someone, right? And you know that he's coming, and therefore on the material platform, sooner or later he's going to leave. But on the spiritual platform, that's not true. See, on the spiritual platform, when you welcome someone in your life, on the spiritual platform, that person never leaves. Physically, that person may leave, but that person can be with you eternally. For example, you may invite your spiritual master, and he may give you some instruction, then he leaves. But the fact that that instruction stays with you, Therefore, there is never any separation. The vani of the spiritual master is not different from the vatu of the physical form. And therefore, the spiritual master is always present. Or if you bring Krishna in your life, say if you bring Krishna in your life, then even though somehow or other Krishna may apparently separate from you, but he can never separate. When you invite the Supreme Personality of Godhead or welcome the Supreme Personality of God in your life, then that opens up a completely different environment, atmosphere, a different world. And death is basically that door that opens that other world, opens that different dimension. Okay? So we'll read through the purport, and as we read through sections of the purport, we'll explain till the end of the purport. So I'll read the Sanskrit. This is Canto 2, Chapter 1, Text 15, First Step in God Realization. Ante kale tu purusha agate gata sadhavasa chindyat asanga shastrena sriham dehe nuye chatam. Translation. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachments to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. Please repeat. At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachments to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So how many of you had near-death experience? Or NDE, near-death experience. Any one of you? No? There are many encounters of near-death experience. In fact, many scientists are amazed with the evidence that they receive scientifically of persons who experience near-death experience. Near-death experience basically means you are at the verge of dying, and you may, in some cases, may be dead. Some cases going through a surgery just before dying. Just you're at the last stage of your life. And different people have different experiences, but most of them have the experience of coming out of the body. And they can see their body, they can, you know, hear other people, they can see different situations, they can even travel to different places and then witness certain situations and then come back into their body. Now, you'll find that one thing is very strong when these people have near that experience is they very clearly, graphically, they've realized that they are different from the body. And many of them, their whole life changes from what it was, because now they have understanding, and not just understanding, but graphic realization. They're, hold on, I was looking at me. Now, naturally, you can imagine if somebody doesn't have the basis of Krishna consciousness, when he's near that experience and is looking at his body, the doctors are doing a surgical operation, he's thinking, hold on, that's me. But hold on, hear me. And he's a little confused that, hold on, if this is me, then who's that? Because that's also me. See? But because the experience is so amazing, he understands that, hold on, I have to be different from that which I thought was me. And that's when they get a realization that actually I'm different from the body. And their whole life after that is totally different. It's focused more in trying to understand this type of experience that they receive. For us, just like we all, none of us have experience, near-death experience. Some Soji masters have experience, near-death experience, where they came out of their body and then they go back into the body. Haridas Thakur, he could experience near-death experience spontaneously, voluntary. He could come out of his body voluntary and go back in his body at will. For us, we may not have that experience, but we use scripture as an impetus to correct our life or change our life. Therefore we use the Bhagavatam in this aspect to appreciate that there is something beyond death or beyond this material life. Many people have had that experience, they get that glimpse. And they obviously have scientifically investigated, and they appreciate, many scientists now appreciate, that there is consciousness in the body that exists and is eternal and stays even after the body dies. Even when the brain is dead, when the body is dead, somebody still is alive. There was one incident of a reverend. He was, he died, and he was put into the mortuary. After 3 days, the doctor got him out to do some post-mortem, and all of a sudden, the reverend woke up. You can imagine this doctor must have, really got a shock. What is, every 3 days, you consider the person gone already. But they can appreciate that there's a big difference between the body and the conscious person. In another situation, the doctors, they were doing a heart, bypass, and the patient came out of his body, and he was looking at his body, and the doctors were busy sewing him up. And next to the bed, there was a cupboard, and on top of the cupboard, there was an apple. So because he was, floating above his body, he could see the apple. And he could see the doctor speaking to the other nurses and what they were doing. And at one point, his hand, started to flap. And all this while, he was obviously, unconscious from the doctor's perspective. And then he goes back into the body. Okay, after the operation is done, he comes back into his body, and he, medication wears out, and then he starts to speak. And then he tells the doctors exactly what they were doing. And he also told the doctor, can you please get me the apple that's above, the cupboard. Now, if you're a patient, and the cupboard was very high, so if you're the patient, you come in, you're in the bed, you don't really know what's up. When the doctors are trying to figure out how did he know that the apple was there. And obviously people say, well, maybe, saw the day before or whatever. But he saw the apple while, floating above. And then when he described exactly what the doctor was telling the nurses, and even that his arm was moving, then they could understand, hold on, definitely there is something here. So there is consciousness and there is the body. And the consciousness is the symptom of the soul, and then there is the body, which is dead matter. So death is basically when the soul leaves the body, okay? And we have to prepare. So Prabhupada in the purport says, the foolishness of gross materialism is that people think of making a permanent settlement in this world. Although it is a settled fact that one has to give up everything here that has been created by the valuable human energy. Great statesmen, scientists, philosophers, etc., who are foolish without any information of the spirit soul, think that this life of a few years only is all in all, and there is nothing more after death. This poor fund of knowledge, even in the so-called learned circles of the world, is killing the vitality of human energy, and the awful result is being keenly felt. Yet the foolish materialistic men do not care about what is going to happen in the next life. The preliminary instructions in the Bhagavad Gita is that one should know that the identity of the individual living entity is not lost even after the end of this present body, which is nothing but an outward dress only. So in this first part, the purport proper is emphasizing the reality in the material world. People out there, they neglect this fact, they ignore this fact about the fact that there is life after death. And not only is there life after death in this world, in this realm, but there is life even right now in other realms. And there is life even right now beyond this material realm. Okay? So a devotee, he appreciates that point, and he understands that there is more to what meets the eye, and therefore he does not make a permanent situation in the material world. He does not take all his energy and try to develop a permanent situation here, because he understands that the situation here is temporary. We are going to be separated from everything we are working for, we are building, we are endeavoring for. That is the nature of life in the material world. And Prabhupada is making the point that the foolish materialists, they obviously think that this life is all in all. But slowly people are becoming aware that there is life after death. And there was life before this life. A lot of doctors, a lot of scientists are again researching reincarnation, and there is so many evidences around the world, not only in India but around the world, of children. Because generally when the scientists, when they do research, they want things to be scientifically proven. And one thing that dissuades them in terms of reincarnation, when it comes to evidence, is that they don't appreciate adults giving some sort of past life history. Or even with adults being hypnotized and go into hypnotic regression, because that's one way they obviously go into past life. And the reason they disapprove this as evidence is because they say that, well, you know, he's an adult, so he can conjure some things, and he's intelligent, he's educated, so he can always come up with some fabricated story. See? And therefore they don't, you know, really appreciate the adults. But what they were baffled with is hundreds and hundreds of cases of children of all ages immediately coming forth and telling their parents, I don't belong in this family, I actually belong in this village, or I belong in this country, or these are my parents. Now when, you know, children start to say this, now it becomes a little difficult to digest, because, you know, children are restricted in their thinking, they haven't really gone through life, they may not even know what, you know, opposite in the other village, or what to talk about even in another village where there is another country. And this is where doctors and, you know, scientists are amazed that actually, and many of them, what they do, there's Dr. Stevenson, what he does is he researches all these evidences. They go meet a child and they ask the child all the different questions, and the child will say, well, I belong in this village or in this country, and this, you know, these are my parents, this is my room, and then they go and they try to track, they try to link what the child is actually talking about. And in many cases, they find that actually they can verify that the child was actually living before in that family. And many of them, they find that there's a lot of connection, especially when there's a violent death, somebody shot. So that you see the person in this life, he has certain deformation in his body. So they link certain things like that. One incident, the child, you know, basically said, "I, you know, belong in this country and at this place," and he could graphically give the descriptions of his parents, even of his room. And they tracked back through names and through maps, and eventually they came to the house. And it so happened that there was a child living in the house, and the child was killed a few years ago. And the parents, you know, because they had, you know, attachment to the child, they locked the room up. They didn't want to, you know, clean the room up and break the room. They wanted to keep the room as it is, you know, sentimentally attached. So they didn't want to change anything. They just left whatever toys or whatever else was in the room. They just left it like this. And the kid that was born again, he obviously was saying, "Well, I had these toys, and in my cupboard I have this toy, and this is on this in this place." And when the scientists went to analyze, the room was locked, so they asked the parents, "Can you please open? We want to investigate what this child was saying." And when they found that basically whatever the child mentioned, the toys, in the position, everything was as described. So naturally they could conclude that actually that child was living in this house. And now he's taken birth again, and naturally he's taken birth again, Krishna, he's taken birth in another body. So here Prabhupada is making the point that this is what Bhagavad Gita is making, or this is the point that Bhagavad Gita is making right in the beginning, the basic of spiritual life, that I'm not this body. And now scientists are slowly grasping this point, that actually we are different from the body. But they cannot really get full understanding, full knowledge, full comprehension, because these things cannot be fully researched. You have to accept scripture and you have to receive knowledge coming from higher authority. So in the first part of the purport, this is the first point, that our home is the spiritual abode. We are temporarily here to learn our lessons, to perfect our life, and as Prabhupada would put it, to prepare for death. This is why we are here. We are given an opportunity to prepare for death. Then Prabhupada continues. "As one changes an old garment, so the individual living being also changes his body. And this change of body is called death. Death is therefore a process of changing the body at the end of the duration of the present life." So Prabhupada is basically giving a definition of death. Death means changing body. That's all. A lot of people fear death because Jaya Shishinkaya Govariki. A lot of people fear death because they don't know what's going to happen after death. But when you are prepared for death, you will know exactly when you're going to leave, and you will know exactly what's the position in your next life, what body you're going to get in your next life. So there's no fear. But majority of the people, they fear the experience of death. And Prabhupada basically said, it's like changing our clothes. Every day we change our clothes. Now, how many of you find it very traumatic to change your clothes? You know, it's like you start shaking when you don't want to change your clothes. You know, you are mentally disturbed. You know, there's so much fear and anxiety, and you know, you may even faint. Any of you experience like that? No. In many cases, it's very blissful. Sometimes there may be tension, you know, if you have 200 pairs of shoes, wondering now, you know, which shoe I should wear. You know, like some, you know, people in the royal kingdom, they have a whole wardrobe of clothes, they don't know which one to wear, and it's like a challenge. Should I wear this one, that one, no, this one, that one, no. But, you know, you have more simple lifestyle, then it's very easy, it's not traumatic, you know, you put on your clothes and carry on. So just as you put on your clothes and carry on, Death also, for those that are prepared, is like that. Giving up this cloth and taking on another cloth. Okay? So that is basically what death is. Changing our cloth, this material body, at a time of death. And what cloth you take on, just like in your wardrobe, it's not that the clothes will automatically jump on you. No. Or, you know, somebody says, why did you wear that? I don't know, it just came on me. No. You consciously decide what you want to wear. See? Similarly, at the time of death, you consciously decide what cloth you want in your next life. What body you want in your next life. And that's what we need to prepare for. Prabhupada continues. Here's a beautiful definition of intelligence. Where to ask any of you. How many of you are intelligent? So if you want to know whether you really classify or qualify as intelligent, then here's a definition of intelligence. An intelligent person must be prepared for this and must try to have the best type of body in the next life. Okay? So an intelligent person must be prepared for death so that he can welcome the spiritual worlds, so that he can welcome Krishna. Prabhupada described for a devotee, death means closing your eyes and opening your eyes, and Krishna is right in front of you. That's death for a devotee. So you can imagine, if you practice spiritual life nicely, then death is some situation you cannot wait for, especially when you're ready. You get some of these brilliant students, they are prepared for the exam way before the exam even comes. And everybody else that's studying last minute, they in so much anxiety, whereas the student who's prepared, he's happy. He can even loaf the day for the exam because he's prepared, he's well prepared. He can write the exam anytime. So he's very blissful. In fact, he's waiting for the exam because he knows he'll pass the flying colors. Similarly, when we prepare for death, you could imagine the excitement a devotee feels. I can't wait to go through this transition because I am going to be seeing Krishna, the most amazing person, the person who I've been trying to cultivate a relationship all my life, the person who I've been glorifying and I'm trying to surrender, and now I'm going to see him face to face. I can't wait. So it's a totally different experience compared to those who are not prepared. So this is intelligence. We want to be prepared, and we want to prepare for the best body. And Prabhupada will tell us exactly what is the best body. Prabhupada says, the best type of body is a spiritual body, which is obtained by those who go back to the kingdom of God and enter the realm of Brahman. In the second chapter of this canto, this matter will be broadly discussed. But as far as the change of body is concerned, one must prepare now for the next life. Foolish people attach more importance to the present temporal life, and thus the foolish leaders make appeal to the body and bodily relations. The bodily relations extend not only to this body, but also to family members, wife, children, society, country, and so many things which end at the end of life. After death, one forgets everything about the present bodily relations. We have a little experience of this at night when we go to sleep. While sleeping, we forget everything about this body and bodily relations. Although this forgetfulness is temporary, is a temporary situation for only a few hours. Death is nothing but sleeping for a few months in order to develop another term of bodily engagement, which we are awarded by the law of nature according to our aspiration. Therefore, one has only to change the aspiration during the course of this present body, and for this there is need of training in the current duration of human life. So Prabhupada is describing that our body that we're going to get in our next life, we are already creating that. And we are creating our body in our next life according to our desire and aspiration through life. Whatever you're desiring, that's how the body has been molded. And you could imagine, we desire so many things. So nature has a very difficult job to mold your next body. But the key factor of our desire and aspiration are those of which we are most attached to. So those desires that we contemplate on most, those activities that we most attach to, those are the activities that would mold our future body. And that is why Prabhupada is describing that training is required at any moment, but most conducive is from the early stages of our life, so that we can mold our life to get a conducive body. And the conducive body that we want is a spiritual body. Right now we have a material body, but we want a spiritual body. And the soul, when the soul gets its own spiritual form, that means back to the spiritual world, then one is living one's genuine life. Okay. So in spiritual life, that's what we are preparing for, that's what we are doing. We are molding our life so that we can prepare in our next life to get a spiritual form, to get a spiritual body. Mm-hmm. And how are we doing that? By thinking of Krishna. The more you bring Krishna in your life, through chanting the holy name of Krishna, through eating Krishna prasadam, through glorification and hearing about Krishna, through serving Krishna. Indeed, in these different ways, the more you bring Krishna in your life, you are now molding your future body. Okay? And at the time of death, when you leave, you will then get that body according to your practice, according to your training. Devotees, they leave in different ways. We have many examples of devotees who have trained their life, as we described, and then when death comes, they may experience death in different ways. Okay? Because as we explained, death is basically a change from this body, which is material, to your spiritual body. If you look at Narad Muni, he was practicing from the age of 5. And you can read in the first canto of the Bhagavatam what he was doing. When the sages would come to Narad Muni's father's house, they would welcome the sages, and his father would sit them down and feed them. And Narad Muni, he was very happy to serve these Vaishnavas, these devotees. And not only was he happy serving them, but one thing he was very attached to was after they would eat, he would take the remnants. And it's described that he would even ask the saintly persons, can I please have your remnants? And they would be very happy and mercifully bestow their compassion on this young boy, and then he would take remnants. Narad Muni describes that he wasn't attached to playing sports. When his friends would go play sports, he would hear about Krishna, glorify Krishna. So he molded his life in this way. And when it was time for him to die, it's described that he instantly died and instantly awoke. It's described like a bolt of lightning, just a quick flash. He was dead and alive. So he left his material form, and instantly he received his spiritual form as Narad Muni, as the spiritual spaceman. Mm-hmm. And that's how he became Narad Muni. Narottam Das, one great Vaishnava devotee, he left in a different way. He experienced death in a different way. He knew that now it's time for him to leave. So he entered into the river Padma, and he told his disciples, he went up to waist deep into the river, and he told his disciples to please massage his back. So they came and they started to massage his back, and as they were massaging, Narayana Thakur's body melted and became milk. So he left in this way. His body just transformed into milk, and he assumed his spiritual form in Navadvipdam, Goloka Vrindavan. Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, he experienced death. When it was time for him to die, then all that happened was a spiritual aeroplane came. That would be a nice way to die. See, you are welcome to the spiritual world. That's how he died. So, immediately he didn't, get a shock. He just saw a lot of spiritual aeroplane came. And they said, you can come now. That's how he died. And Yamaraj came to meet him. And Yamaraj bowed down, offered obeisances, Dhruva Maharaj stepped on his head into the plane, and off it went. So this is how he died. The incarnations, sometimes people ask, how did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leave? The incarnations, they don't die. They are eternal. They appear and disappear. They don't really take birth and die like us. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared in this world, and when he had to apparently go through the experience of death, which is like a change of body, which he doesn't change because they are eternal, then he just went two places. He went into the ocean and just disappeared into the ocean. And he also went into the temple of Svata Gopinath and merged with the deity, went into the deity. So this is how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world. Same thing with Lord Ramachandra and his associates. All the associates in Ayodhya, when they had to experience death, the Lord said, okay, now it's time up, that we all go. And they all went into the river Ganges, and they just energized, ascended back to the spiritual world. So that's how they died. Now, we don't know how we're going to die. Our experience may not be as wonderful as these great devotees, but if we train ourselves as Prabhupada is describing, then we can also leave this world. There are many examples of devotees in ISKCON. Naturally they were sick, they were chronically ill, and they were preparing for death. Many devotees, they are given knowledge and inspiration by the super soul when they're going to leave. And in many cases they even know already that even before they haven't left this world, but already they are welcomed in the spiritual world. They are given a glimpse of what their spiritual body is going to be. So therefore for them, the death experience is already blissful, because they already now know what they're going to achieve, and therefore they're very happy to leave this world. Okay? I'll just read the last part of the purport. Other one, Prabhupada says, we just have to change our desire, change our aspiration. And that change of aspiration means, I want to leave the world like that. I want to be welcomed in the spiritual world. I want to go back to Godhead. And just by having that desire, then we will start molding our life in the proper way. So Prabhupada at the end of the purport says, the best thing is therefore that everyone voluntarily give up family relations by transferring the attachment from family, society, country, everything thereof to devotional service of the Lord. It is stated here that one should give up all desires of family attachment. One must have a chance for better desires, otherwise there is no chance of giving up such morbid desires. Desire is concomitant factor of the living entity. The living entity is eternal, and therefore his desires, which are natural for the living being, are also eternal. One cannot therefore stop desiring, but the subject matter for desiring can be changed. One must develop the desires for returning home back to Godhead, and automatically the desires of material gain, material honor, and material popularity will diminish in proportion to the development of devotional service. A living being is meant for the service activities, and his desires are centered around such service attitude. Beginning from the top executive head of the state down to the insignificant pauper in the street, all are rendering some sort of service to others. The perfection of such service attitude is only attained simply by transferring the desire of service from matter to spirit and from Satan to God. So Prabhupada is concluding that we all have attachments and we all have different material desires. And those material desires will impact and influence our next body. So therefore it is crucial that all our desires and all our attachments are transformed from material to spiritual. Okay? We have family members, we have relationships, we have material facilities. So we cannot cut these things. We cannot separate ourselves from these things. But what we can do is use them and transform them from matter to spirit. Just like if you attach to your car. Now, you know, you may get some people very insanely attached to their car. Every morning, the first thing they do is take darshan of their car. Then they do some puja to the car. Do abhishek, make sure they bathe the car nicely. Then they wipe with scented oils. They may light some incense. They put garland in the car. So many things. They worship the car. Nobody must touch the car. Nobody must drive the car. So they are fully car conscious. Now you can imagine if you attach to that car, that while you're looking, somebody is leaning against your car, right? And you come past your car and you see somebody leaning, what are you going to say? You're going to get angry. You're going to be upset. And you may scold the person, and then you're going to look and see, where there were any scratches. So people can become very attached to their car. Okay, I'm just giving that example, but that's true. And they don't want anyone to touch it. They don't want anyone to drive it. Okay. So they obsessed and they attached to that car, and you can imagine that attachment is molding your next life. See? Because when you're going to leave this world, you're going to leave everything you're attached to. It's going to be separated from you. So your car will have to be left alone. And you can imagine the pain you're going to feel. Because now you're going to be thinking, who's going to be driving my car? I hope it's not him. I hope it's not her. So immediately you're going to start meditating on your attachment, which is the car, and you die. So you can imagine what that is going, what your body is going to be in your next life. You may be born in your car as some insect, or you may be born as a tree, or you may be born as silicon. Something in relation to your car. Or if you really attach, you may become, be born as, the CEO in your car company. Who knows what will happen, how you will be attached to that car in some way or other. But no doubt, that attachment will be very strong. And it will give you your body. So now, you can't tell this person, cut yourself from the car. It's very difficult. But what he can do, if he can, as Prabhupada says, dovetail or transfer that attachment to Krishna. So then he can use that car which is attached to in the service of Krishna. And when he uses that car in the service of Krishna, now he can be attached to that car. Because now that car is used in the service of Krishna. And when he educates himself that actually this car is Krishna's property, because it's Krishna's energy. Krishna says, water, earth, water, fire, air, ether, these are my energies. So the Ka is made up of these elements. And therefore, because it's Krishna's energy, it belongs to Krishna. And therefore, I use it in Krishna's service. Now, his concept of being attached to the Ka is being attached to Krishna's property. And therefore, I use that in Krishna's service. Okay, not going to the disco, not going to other places which is separated from Krishna, but going to Krishna's, going to do some service for Krishna, going to the temples, I'm using that vehicle for the proper purpose. And then, even at a time of death, if I think of that Ka, I will actually get a spiritual form. Because now when I think of that Ka, I think of that Ka in relation to Krishna, in relation to Krishna's energy. And therefore I get the blessing of thinking of Krishna, and I can then get a spiritual form. So this is how we have to prepare. Everything that we have in terms of our attachments, in our terms of our desires, we should mold them. And Prabhupada says, Krishna-tize them. Okay, so we want to Krishna-tize everything. Our desires, our attachments, and when we do this, from matter to spirit, from Satan to God, from Maya to Krishna, that's what Krishna-tize means. Everything. When you perfectly do this, then leaving this world is glorious. And then you would have achieved the perfection of human life. This would then imply that you have actually become the most intelligent person, because you have prepared, and you have now prepared for the best. And this is what Srila Prabhupada and what the Bhagavatam, what the Vedic scriptures are presenting to us in this world. Every human being has this service to do, this important role, this important function in human form of life. Even the animals, they have to do this. Even the trees. But they don't have the facility. We as human beings are given that facility. And therefore, we need to take full advantage of the facilities that we are given to do this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears from the spiritual world in order to do this. Krishna comes all the way from the spiritual world, and he descends in his daily form so that we can take our desires and transform them, allow us to become attached to them in service. We also have Giriraj that appeared now on the altar. So Giriraj, he also is in the spiritual world, and he also descends so that we can pray to him. And think of him. Prabhupada from the spiritual world descended so that we can serve him. He gave us so much knowledge so that we can educate ourselves how to practically train ourselves and prepare for death. And for devotees, when we are prepared, Prabhupada explains, the more older we become, the more wise we become. The more realized we become, and the more blissful we become, because we are preparing for that final moment. Whereas on the material platform, if you don't do that, then you find on the material platform, the more older you become, the more senile people become, they lose their memory, they become so full with anxiety, they become fearful, they become completely dependent. And that increases the fear. It's a completely different situation. So in Krishna consciousness, death basically means we are now going to be welcomed in the spiritual worlds. A world that we actually are part of, and the world that we eagerly await. We are hankering to be back with Krishna. We are hankering to go back to the spiritual worlds. So we should take full advantage of all the training that Srila Prabhupada is presenting and giving us, and the tools that he has given us from the spiritual world. And if we take full advantage, then we will be very blissful, and we will leave this world in a blissful way. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So are there any questions? In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, it stated how the soul is completely unaffected by material factors. Yes. and his soul is not burnt by fire, etc. Now, dimension is dependent on a material element, space. This is a fact. So then how is it stated in Shastra that the soul has dimension, that is 1/10,000th of the hair? This is relating the soul to a material element which is somehow contradictory to Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, please explain. Yeah, you're correct. The soul has no dimension. In many things from the spiritual platform we cannot understand. And therefore, scripture wants us to understand. For many people, for example, when they say God have a form, even that is very difficult to appreciate. Whereas for many of us, to accept that Krishna has a form is very simple. See? So a lot of people have different challenges. How can God have a form? Because you know my form is, you know, my form gets sick, my form gets old. So how can God have a form? See, because now they try to put the material form onto God's form, the material conception on God's form. But God's form doesn't get sick. God's body doesn't get old. Krishna's body is Sachidananda Vigraha, full of bliss, eternal, not like this body. Similarly, dimension. The soul has no dimension. So when scripture says that the soul is 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, okay, what they're saying is they're trying to give some sort of description of the soul, that the soul is so tiny, okay, and you can't measure it. So that's one point they're trying to present, that spirit cannot be measured. Okay, and another point they're trying to present, or the second point they're trying to present, is you so tiny, therefore please understand and act so tiny. You're not big, so you should be proud. I'm so great. No, you're not great, you're very tiny. Okay, so it's the attitude that they're trying to present to you, that don't think I'm so proud and I'm so expert and I'm so great and I can do so many things. Nope, you're so tiny, so act your size. That's another point. The third point the Vedas are trying to propagate by making this point that the soul is 1/10,000th of the tip of the head, is they're trying to reveal to you how far you are away from the spiritual world. See, the further you move away from the spiritual world, the smaller you become. Your size shrink. Okay? For example, you're in the plane, right? And you're going to take off. And you look at the airport. How small is the airport? Yeah, it's big. Right? Now you take off. And as you're taking off and you look at the airport, what's happening? It's becoming smaller and smaller, and when you're far away, it'll become so small that you can't even see it. But does that mean that the airport has changed size? Does that mean the airport disappeared? No, but what does it mean? Yes, you are very far away from the airport. Okay? So that's how the scriptures are presenting this point. That because you are moving away from the spiritual world, you are becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and so insignificant that your spiritual form basically disappears, becomes so insignificant you can't even measure it. And not only has your spiritual form become so tiny and so insignificant, but now you have a form, and that's the material form. So your spiritual form becomes so insignificant and your material form becomes significant. Now when you become Krishna conscious, your material form will become significant and your spiritual form will become significant. And while you're practicing Krishna consciousness, your spiritual form is now developing back to its original nature. And therefore it's no more 1/10,000th above the head. And when you're fully developed, you will now have your spiritual tongue, your spiritual ears, your spiritual senses to actually glorify Krishna with. Okay? So that's the understanding. Why is Giriraj Govardhan out of the silver box and now decorated, worshipped on the altar? Because he wants to give you his darshan. Giriraj was always there on the altar, and he normally comes out during Govardhan Puja, but the devotees felt that he should give his darshan, and we should put him on the altar so that everyone can take darshan of Giriraj. Giriraj is described to be the greatest of all devotees, as well as his Krishna himself. So you have another great personality to pray to ask for spiritual strength to successfully transition this world and return back to his shelter in the spiritual boat. Please explain ego. Ego basically means I. Okay? And you get false I and you get true I. So you get real ego and you get false ego. Real ego means I am a servant of Krishna. I am a spiritual being. That's real ego. False ego means I am this material body. And then that false ego can have different layers now. So as soon as you say, I am this body, immediately you can now extend that false ego to greater and greater depths. In fact, there is no limit to how much that false ego can increase. For example, now you can say, I am this body, I am an Indian, I am a very good Indian, I am a very proud Indian, I am the best Indian, I am the great Indian, etc. You can go on and on and on, unlimited in terms of false ego. And Krishna consciousness, the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that process is basically there to dissolve the false ego, to purify the false ego. So the more we chant Hare Krishna, it will purify all the layers of false ego. And when all the false ego is purified, then you will relate on the real ego. And the real ego is Jiveswara Pohe Krishna Nityadas. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. And this is the real situation, this is the real ego we need to cultivate. Okay, so that is what ego means. Alright, so now we'll stop and have kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.